Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. With the arrival of Trump, the West post-war liberal order is being dismantled. So long to the rules-based order. What will replace the West's slogans of democracy, rule of law, and human rights? The American empire is not ending, it's only retooling. Crosstalking the American Empire, I'm joined by my guest, Margaret Kimberly, in New York. She is executive editor of Black Agenda Report. In Denver, we have Tyler Nixon. He's an attorney and political strategist. And in Coeur d'Alene, we cross to David Riley. He's an award-winning radio host, a conservative activist, and co-host of the Backlash podcast. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. We're going to go to David first because he got up earliest for this program, and it's very much appreciated. The other side of the world. David, I mean, let's try to get our hands around what's going on around us, because so much at the same time. Let's focus in on foreign policy. Trump started out by talking about acquiring Greenland, Panama, possibly making Canada the 51st state. And then we had this big story about USAID. You can look at that story from multiple vectors. It's fascinating. I think all of us would agree that seeing it downsized, even destroyed, might not be a bad idea. An outlier is Trump's position on Gaza, which is kind of evolving. And of course, this week we have the Munich Security Conference, and we're told by J.D. Vance Ukraine is top of the list. Those are a lot of different things going on at the same time. What do you make of it? As I said in my introduction, I think this liberal order is coming to an end. Good riddance, fine. It's not democratic. It doesn't support people's rights. It doesn't support workers, that's for sure. We see something leaving. What is arriving? Go ahead, David.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of debate on the right, on the left, about exactly what is going on in this country. I was speaking with Alexander Dugin earlier this week, and he believes that there is a conservative revolution that's happening in America. Others think that it's a white supremacist revolution that's happening. What I'm actually concerned about is the takeover by these tech oligarchs that seem to have captured the Republican Party for the interests of Silicon Valley and, frankly, for the interests of Israel first, not necessarily America first. And these are very concerning developments, frankly, as a conservative, as a Republican, as somebody who voted for Donald Trump. I did not vote to have an increased presence in the Middle East. I did not vote to take over Greenland or Panama. I voted to make America great again. I voted to, see our country prosper. I voted for an end to the war in Ukraine and an end to the endless wars in the Middle East. And that does not exactly seem like what we're getting. Now, the USAID stuff, the collapse of this evil, basically CIA front organization is good, but it's just the first step. There's a whole industry built around interventionism, regime change all around the world. And I'm not exactly sure that throwing some red meat to the conservative base in the form of, taking down the Department of Education or USAID, I'm not sure if that's going to cut it. We've got some serious concerns about where we are headed as a country, and it seems like no one is fully sure exactly what is going on right now in Washington, D.C.
Tyler, only now is Elon Musk been in directed to take a look at the Defense Department. I think that's the proof in the pudding right there. I mean, it is the most wasteful organization ever known to mankind. It's the biggest polluter, by the way, as well. There's a lot of special interest right there. And, and David already brought it up, and I think it's much more part of our parlance right now. I mean, the oligarchs have their fingers in all over that. The oligarchs, like, we have to stress that word, because that's what we have. We have tech oligarchs here. And they were from the left, now they're on the right. They're all interested in money. Go ahead, Tyler.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I don't take such a dim view at, 3 weeks into the administration.
Fair.
I mean, it's been a stunning array of bold moves against, frankly, what has been, you want to talk about oligarchic. I mean, we've had a technocratic sort of bureau fascist police state, essentially, jailing opponents. I mean, it's been a nightmare, frankly, and it's not just been for the last 4 years. It's been for the last 40 years or more. I mean, it all began with the assassination of President Kennedy. This just horrible combine of globalists. You know, they want American hegemony, but it's always at the end of a gun barrel or through the CIA's intrigues. And you know what we need, what we're seeing, I think, is the beginnings of the reassertion of America as a supremacy, American supremacy, so to speak, based on the fact that we are a transparent republic run by the people, that serves the people, leading by example. I mean, let's face it, the CIA, that ilk, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, they've soiled our reputation around the world. They have squandered our moral standing, or moral, I don't want to say superiority. We don't have moral superiority, but certainly any kind of moral high ground that we might have had, as a would-be democracy. And look, I mean, it's not going to be a pretty thing. I'm seeing bold moves unlike I've ever seen in my lifetime by any president, even including Ronald Reagan. I mean, Trump, if he follows through on this, I mean, the people who are squealing over his what he's doing are exactly the people you want squealing, because they are the people who've been mucking things up, just bleeding us out as a nation, totally, again, squandering our international credibility. So I'm going to take a big picture view. As far as the tech oligarchs, I mean, look, I attended a rally where, he brought Pompeo, Trump brought Pompeo out on the stage, slapped him on the back and said, you're a great guy, Mike, and all this. And then as soon as literally the door hadn't barely shut, and he said, you're not welcome. And, same with Nikki Haley. And, I love that, because I think that, Trump is someone who's going to bring you close. But with these tech oligarchs, it's almost like he knows where they stood and how they've opposed him, how they've undermined him over the years. And frankly, I think it's very much of sort of a victory.
Tyler, I think we would all agree. I'd kind of like to have equal distance from the state and these oligarchs. I want to keep them at arm's length here. David, one of the interesting things I mentioned, the Munich conference is going to be held this week here. But if there's a logical consistency to Trump's foreign policy, then he's going to continue down the path of keeping NATO at arm's length. It doesn't do the U.S. any positive good. It's a lot of money. It's entanglements. I mean, if Montenegro gets into an argument with a country, is the United States supposed to go and defend it? I mean, it's absurd, okay? And so I think that's one of the things they're going to be looking at, is that there's the America needs to take care of the United States. All that money at USAID, I think the survivors of the recent hurricane would love that money. You get my drift. Go ahead, David.
No, absolutely. I mean, NATO is an outdated organization. It has, frankly, outlived its mandate. It was founded to combat the Soviet Union, to provide some balance for the West against, communism or whatever. And that is clearly no longer the case. I mean, since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, we've had NATO repurposed, working in Iraq, Bosnia, Kosovo, Yugoslavia, bombing and campaign after bombing campaign. And it's not for the interests of the United States, and it's not for the interests of Europe, frankly. Donald Trump was right about that in 2016. He was right about it when he was talking about it towards the end of his presidency in 2020. If his position is still to dismantle NATO and to withdraw from that organization, I think that would be a good thing for the American people. It would help put America first. It would get us away from these foreign entanglements. And frankly, he is right that Europe needs to pay its fair share, right? They're supposed to pay 2% of the budget, each of these countries that are members, and they aren't. They haven't been, and we've been footing the bill for that. And, as we've been, sending all of our bombs and our money off blow people up in the Middle East, our people at home are addicted to fentanyl. They're starving. They are, being replaced by AI or mass migration, with this kind of takeover of Silicon Valley. I would like to see us get out of NATO, and I would like to see Donald Trump end the war in Russia, because that's why most of us voted for him.
Yeah, but Margaret, there's the outlier here, his stand on Gaza, which is quite bewildering. Go ahead, Margaret, before we go to the break.
Yes, he looked like the hero. Biden had gone. Yeah,
but Margaret, by the end of this week, he might not be. Keep going.
Absolutely. He did initially because Biden just decided to let Netanyahu do whatever he wanted to do, which is one of the reasons I think Kamala Harris ended up losing. Trump got this deal done that had been on the table for a year. He looked like the one who was going to possibly change U.S. policy. Now we have something even worse. Jordan and Egypt said they told Biden, we're not taking anybody from Gaza. But now Trump has can't let go of this idea of ethnic cleansing. That's what it is, sending 2 million people out of the country that the U.S. ought to be rebuilding and claiming the U.S. is going to buy Gaza, which doesn't make any sense. So sometimes I think Trump is his own worst enemy. He started out in this regard looking like the hero, but now he's looking like he's even worse than Biden, which is quite a feat.
Well, yeah, I mean, my take on it, and I want to be generous. I mean, we traditionally have the 100 days, right? Okay. My take on this, on the Gaza situation, is that this is my idea. Do you have a better one? Well, there are a lot of better ideas, but that's how he's pitching it here. All right, folks, I'm going to jump in here, and we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on American foreign policy under Trump. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing American foreign policy under Trump. Okay, let's go back to Tyler in Denver. This whole U.S. AID story is fascinating from so many different angles. One of the things that I found really surprising is that so many people were surprised. I've lived most of my entire life abroad, and I've seen AID everywhere. When I first moved to Russia in 1998, they were everywhere. They were funding everything. They had their hooks into all kinds. And then when Putin came to power, they were all thrown out, okay? And Russia is much better as a result of it, okay? But, I mean, so many people are so surprised. Look at the stories just right off the top of my head. $41 million in the last Georgian election. And they're still contesting it. The USAID does not believe in democracy, not in Moldova, not in Georgia, not in Romania. Romania, a NATO country and an EU country. They don't believe in democracy there, which is really, and then you look at Ukraine. 90% of their independent media is funded by the U.S. government? I mean, this is what I find. This is the manufacturing of consent. And if we can get rid of that, and I want to give a hat tip to Margaret, populist movements on the left and the right were being crushed by this organization and their massive budget here. That getting rid of that will let democratic views bloom. This was toxin. This was poison. Tyler.
Well, I think it's more shock and not so much for the international, which is, you know, of course, like you said, I think everybody knew that this was the sort of the deep state, military intelligence industrial complex slush fund. What I think is shocking is the domestic. You're talking about like basically funding Politico, of these. All of these supposed mainstream media organizations and outlets that were absolutely assaulting Trump, certainly, and assaulting any sort of any nascent movement against to take back the republic and to sort of take down this almost alien entity that had taken over the federal government and was acting in our name, and you know, this neoconservative, neoliberal, neo-fascist, frankly, Borg, or this, as they call it, the Blob, I guess, an appropriate name. And I think that's what's really shocking to a lot of people is the extent to which this was just a kickback slush fund for the Democratic Party and, frankly, the hard left and some of the craziest daft beyond belief and just spendthrift beyond belief. So it's shocking on so many levels, just the profligacy of it, the brazenness of just funding, almost directly one side of the political debate in the United States, and then squeal. I mean, you can hear the stuck pig squealing now, and I love it. I mean, it's music to my ears because these people have tooled with our democracy, our republic, with our form of government, with elections. You name it. I mean, they've meddled in everything. And we see now that it's infected, that mindset has infected domestic politics. And now it's been, exposed. The cover's been pulled back and the cockroaches are scurrying. And I think it's great. I think, again, what you're going to have with Trump, ultimately, if nothing else, is a transparent presidency and a transparent government. He's going to do everything out in the open. There's no backdoor deals. There's no furtive maneuvers going on. I mean, for better or worse, you're going to know what's going on. It's going to be out in front because he doesn't do anything behind closed doors.
I hope the language is too, like this rules-based order thing really drove me mad, okay? Just call it what it is, okay? If it is America first, that's fine. Russia will say Russia first. China's going to say China first, okay? You know what, everybody? That's called great power politics. It's not alien. It is only this neoliberal interregnum that changed that, okay? We're going back to great power politics. That can be dangerous, too. David, one of the interesting things is if you look at like 90,000 feet in the air down, is that, you know, the U.S. Intelligence community, they perfected regime change abroad. They started doing it in America starting in 2016, and it's being exposed. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure that, I'm not sure that it just started in 2016. I mean, we are in a deeply wounded country.
Well, they tried to take a president out, okay? That's what I mean, well, okay? A duly elected president.
And in 1963, they did take a president out. They shot Kennedy. They killed him. They killed his brother. They killed Martin Luther King. These people have been in charge of our foreign policy for damn near 70 years. Although there's like kind of nothing new in that sense, there is something new in the sense of what we're seeing now. And you mentioned it before in Gaza. I hate to take a left turn on that, but, you know, our friend from Colorado was talking about how there are no backroom deals. Well, then what was the $230 million that was given to Donald Trump from Miriam Adelson and the Zionist lobby? What was that, if not exactly a backroom deal to get the United States to ethnically cleanse Gaza on behalf of Israel using our funds, our troops, our bombs, our money, and our blood, ultimately? And frankly, I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about with war with Iran. It's very difficult, to get a gauge on exactly. I think it's very difficult, even as an American living here, following the news, to get a real gauge on exactly what is going on in Washington right now.
I think all of us are in agreement on that point for sure. Okay, we're going to see. Because as I said to Margaret before we started, is that by the time we've finished this recording, there'll be another story out there that we're going to have to chase. You know, Margaret, you started in your first answer comparing Trump to Biden, and we had 4 years of Biden. I don't know if he was president, he was officially president. Who was pulling the levers, we still may find out. But do you see more continuity than change here? Because in some ways, you know, we have a different cast of characters. The language is very different. The aspiration may be different. You're not hegemony, but primacy. Those are different things, okay? Do you see more continuity than change, Margaret?
I see more continuity. The rules-based order, they may not use that particular word, but I do not see the United States behaving any differently in the world. We have Trump bullying Panama, which, what a surprise, has given the U.S. the right to have a military base. So you're not going to send in troops, but you get Panama to do what you want them to do. I don't see that changing. I think the Washington establishment does not really change. There may be different language, there may be different methods, but anybody who ascends to the presidency wants the U.S. to have primacy in the world, to use that term. There may be different methods, but as for NATO, the U.S. will stay in NATO. They'll just keep pressuring other countries to spend more on military, which is what Trump did in his first term. So I think when the dust settles, there will be name changes. USAID will be subsumed into the State Department. We'll see changes like that. But basically, U.S. foreign policy is not going to change very much under Trump. Biden didn't change very much from the Trump administration. He did what he did, but worse. So I wish I could be more optimistic, but right now, that's the way the state is set up in this country.
David, Trump was very proud on the campaign trail. Actually, when he was president, then on the campaign trail, that he didn't start any new wars. Is he going to be able to keep that promise in this term, David?
I hope so. For our sake, for our children's sake, and for the sake of the whole country. I mean, whether or not he gets us involved in another foreign war is going to be the absolute defining thing in his presidency.
I agree.
Great presidents end wars. Bad presidents begin wars. And if we're not careful, we've already seen, I guess, some of the representatives from Hamas have come out and basically confirmed that the ceasefire is off at this point because of the United States' position on the Middle East, on Gaza. And that is going to lead to a flare-up. That is going to lead to more people getting killed. And it could very well lead to American troops being brought in, maybe even a USS Liberty moment where Israel attacks us and that is used as a pretext to get involved in a wider war and go after their enemies, not necessarily America's enemies. I don't think our foreign policy has served the American people since Kennedy was killed in 1963. And frankly, nothing has changed. The question is, to what degree does Israel own Donald Trump and his appointments in the State Department, in the Pentagon? That is the real question. Will Hegseth help restrain this kind of genocidal intent on the part of Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud party? Or is he going to turn into a doormat and let these people walk all over America?
Well, I hope he also doesn't flash around his tattoos. In addition, Tyler, to the same question to you, because all of us, that's why Margaret's here, because I wanted a spectrum here. Margaret's a long serving member of the Crosstalk team, and I'm always happy to have her. But we have more consensus here than disagreement, actually. Do you think Trump can keep his promise of not going into a new war? Because, some of the things he said about Iran, maximum pressure, but then he doesn't want to do it. He wants to talk to them. I think he wants to make a deal with the Russians, but it will have to include much more than Ukraine. I see that in him. That spark is there. Tyler, go ahead, Tyler.
Well, I think the other guests' comments are brilliant, frankly, and insightful, and I appreciate it because it makes me think. And, with the exception of Israel, though, talk of, for example, Panama, that's a hemispheric thing. This is dealing with the reality of the emerging BRICS alliance.
Okay, Tyler, you're absolutely right, and that's a topic for another program, the Western Hemisphere itself. You got 40 seconds, my friend. Keep going.
Sure. Look, Trump doesn't want to get us in. I believe him 100% when he said he doesn't want to get us in any wars. And I think these sort of concessions to Israel and the Israel lobby are a way of setting ourselves up to say, look, we've done enough for you and we're not going to go to war. We're not going to go to war with Iran for you. I think ultimately Trump is a deal maker and a negotiator, and he's not going to be taken for a fool, and he's not going to get us into the wars. I believe he made that promise, and he's going to keep that promise. That's one of his hallmarks. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Myself and my esteemed guests, we're going to keep him to that promise, I can guarantee you. Fascinating discussion.
Absolutely.
Across the spectrum, I would like to point out. I want to thank my guests in Idaho, Denver, and in New York. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.